بسم الله، إن الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا، من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلله فلا هادي له، وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله. أما بعد، we have finished كتاب الجنائز or funeral prayers, and we move on now to the next chapter, and that is concerning zakah. Okay, now zakah linguistically means what? To purify, right? So we call our zakah because of the fact that it purifies our money and it makes it halal for us to use. And if we don't give zakah, then our money is not halal, it's not pure for us to use. Okay, zakah is obligatory upon every single Muslim. Every single Muslim that is free, meaning he's not a slave, and he owns the minimum amount known as the nisab. We're going to come to what the minimum is in a little while. But he must own the nisab, the minimum amount known as the nisab. So the first condition is that he must be a Muslim. Obviously, zakat is not obligatory upon non-Muslims. Secondly, he must be free, i.e. not a slave. Thirdly, he must have the minimum amount known as the nisab, right? And if you like, fourthly, he must own that object or that property in a total ownership. He must have complete ownership of what he is, what he must give the zakah upon. طيب. The fifth condition of zakah is that 1 year must go by. Okay, so there are five shurut or five preconditions. What is a shart? A shart is a precondition, right? So there are five conditions of zakah. The first one is that the person must be a Muslim. Second one, he must be free. Third one is what?
Minimum amount,
which is the nisab, which we're going to come to in a little while. And the fourth condition is that he must have total control, the total ownership of. So basically, yani, we're removing from this something which is partly owned or something which you don't have full ownership of. You must have the full ownership of your money or your property or your wealth that you're going to give zakat on. And the last condition is that 1 year must go by since the date of ownership. Okay, basically you have to give zakah once a year. For the fifth condition, there is one exception though. The fifth condition meaning the 1 year condition. There is one exception, and that is agricultural products. That which the earth gives. Because the zakah for them is the day that you harvest them. Okay? In general, zakah is given once a year. Except for products that the earth produces. The fruits that the earth produces. And concerning the time period for that, there is no 1 year time period. Rather, you give zakah the day that you harvest it. Okay? So if you harvest a crop 5 times a year, I don't know any crop that you harvest, I'm just saying theoretically, then you give it every time you harvest. If you harvest a certain crop once every 2-3 years, then you give the zakah every time you harvest that crop. Okay? Apart from that, everything else you need to do or wait the 1 year for. Okay? So then obviously, we didn't mention the person must be of age. We didn't mention this, did we? Okay, why not? Because if a child owns some money, then zakah is still obligatory on that money. Even though the child would not be sinful for you not giving that money, but his parents or his guardian, for example, if he's an orphan, okay, the guardian must give zakah on behalf of that. Likewise, a madman. We didn't mention sanity in this case. Why? Because suppose a madman, you know, he's insane, he inherits money, his father or something, dad, he inherits money. Well, someone, the same person who's responsible for him, must give zakah on his money. So be careful, be clear. These shuruf are very important. We didn't mention sanity and we didn't mention of age. Why? Because an insane person or a person who is not of age, zakah must still be given on his money. Even though he is not obligated to give zakah, because he's too young or he's insane, right? You understand the difference? He cannot give zakah, he's too young, but the person in charge of him, his father or his guardian, or you know, his brother, whatever, whoever is in charge of him, he must give zakah on that money. Okay? Now, know that zakah is upon four things. Zakah is obligatory upon four things, for lack of a better word. Okay, zakah is obligatory upon four things. The first thing or the first object upon which you must give zakah are livestock, animals. Okay, and in particular, cows, sheep, and camels. Sheep including goats, by the way. Okay, cows, sheep, and camels or goats. These are, you have to give zakah on this. And the scholars have a condition here, and that is that you are responsible for feeding them excuse me, not, and they are naturally fed. In other words, you lead them to pastures. Okay? Versus, what is the opposite of that? When you feed them yourselves, when you provide the water and drink, when you have to give them food and drink. Okay? So the scholars say that upon these three categories of animals, which are, what are these three categories? First one is, the largest one is a camel. Second one is a cow. Okay? And then the third one is a sheep or a goat. Basically, the sheep or a goat, both male and female, doesn't matter. And the scholars have a condition here, and that is that they are naturally fed off of the earth. In other words, you lead them to pastures. Okay? Whereas if you house them and you feed them, you have to provide for their food. In this case, the scholars say, there is no zakah. That is the first thing that you have to give zakah on. The second thing that you have to give zakah on are agricultural products, that which the earth produces. Okay? Now, for these two things, for these two categories, we are not going to go into any detail whatsoever. And this is very sad, but our time does not permit us to do so. We won't go into any detail because each of them have their own nisab and they have their own ways of calculating them and they have, ways of giving it out. But the point is, the brother should know if they ever own livestock or if they ever are harvesting, they have a farm and they're producing the agricultural, produce or whatever from the earth, then they should go to a scholar or a student of knowledge and find out what is the minimum nisab and what is the zakat that you give. And all of this is clearly laid out in the Quran and the Sunnah. What is the minimum nisab of the camel and the goat and the sheep and the cows, and how much you give. If you have this many, you give this much. You have this many, you give this much. Likewise, it goes on and on. Unfortunately, we don't have the time to get into both the agricultural and the livestock. But we should know it and be aware of it. Be aware of it. That if we ever own animals or if we ever have a farm, then we should go to a scholar or a student of knowledge and find out how we should give zakah on our what we own. The third thing that you have to give zakah on is, guess, money. Gold and silver or cash, dollars, dinaros, whatever you want to call them. You have to give zakah on money. The fourth thing that you have to give zakah on are business products, okay? Business, if you own a business, for example. Okay, so if you have a shop and it has you're selling, let's say, furniture, okay, then you have to give zakah on the furniture that you're selling. Okay, so business products basically. And we're going to talk about the last two in a little bit of detail, inshallah. Okay, so now, so you understand. So what does this, by the way, before we move on, what does this remove? Do we have to give zakah on our houses that we own? No, we don't. We don't. Because it doesn't come under one of these four things. Do we have to give zakah on the clothes that we wear? No. Do we have to give zakah on the Rolex watch that we own? Yeah, right. No. Do we have to give zakah on our glasses, on our pots, on our pans, on our furniture that we use in our house? No. Do you understand this? Remember, every time we discuss something, think of the opposite of that. This is the whole point of fiqh. I've just told you what you have to give zakah on. Your mind should be working well, that everything else I don't have to give zakah on. Okay? We've just said these are the four things that you have to give zakah on. Anything besides this, you don't have to give zakah on that. Okay? Your car, you have to give zakah on your car. Suppose you own three or four cars, but you own them all. You own them and you use them. No. Doesn't matter. Suppose you own two or three houses, one in Japan, one in Switzerland, and one in America. And you use them. They're not for business purposes. You're using them. Okay? In a sense, you're multimillionaire. You're living 1 week here, 1 week there. Do you have to give zakah on those? No. It should be clear. You have to give zakah on these four items only. Everything else besides them, there is no zakah on those items. Okay? Okay. So now we move on to, we're skipping zakah of agricultural products and zakah of what? Livestock. We are skipping this. I'm very unfortunate, sad that we have to do so, but our time does not permit us to go into detail with regards to those things. Okay. Now we move on to the zakah of money. Now money, obviously, in the good old times, it was pure gold or silver. And in our times, it's dollars and cents. Okay. All the scholars are unanimous that the dollars and cents, they have the same hukum or the same ruling as gold and silver. Don't think that, well, the hadith mentioned gold and silver, well, this is, paper money, I don't have to give zakah on it. No. Basically, it's the currency of the time. Whatever you're using as currency. So first thing we have to discuss is, what is the nisab? What is the nisab? Firstly, define nisab. What is nisab, ya akhi, at the back? You don't know what a nisab is. Do you know, Uthman, what a nisab is? We just defined it 2 minutes ago. What is the bare minimum that you have to have in order for you to pay zakah? So if you have below the nisab, do you have to pay zakah?
No.
If you have below this amount, then you don't have to pay zakah. If you have above this amount or this amount, you have exactly the amount of nisab, then you have to give zakah. Okay? Now the hadith mentioned certain weights here. And to be honest, I don't recall offhand the conversion factors. So I'll just give you the weights and inshallah, I'll ask some of the people of knowledge here in Houston, and inshallah, I'll try to give you the conversion factors to give you the exact conversion factor. The nisab for gold is 20 mithqals. Just write down the Arabic phrase for now. 20 mithqals. And they are roughly 80-something grams of gold, okay? But I'm going to give you an exact figure, inshallah, bi-ithnillahi ta'ala. Roughly 80 grams. You can just say in brackets a rough 80 to 85 grams of gold of our times, okay? I'll get a more precise figure, inshallah, in the next lecture, bi-ithnillah, that there are 20 mithqals of gold, okay? Just write mithqals. Mithqals. And the nisab of silver is 200 dirhams. Just write 200 dirhams, and there a few hundred grams of silver. I don't remember offhand right now. A few hundred grams of silver. There are 200 dirhams of gold. If you have 200 silver, excuse me, 200 dirhams of silver. Naam. Okay. I calculated in riyals once. It was like 2,000 riyals or something. 2,000 riyals. Basically, $700-$800. Just don't write this down. I'm just giving you a rough idea. It's roughly like $700-$800. Like $1,000. If a person owns more than this amount, okay, then he has to give zakah. And I'll give you, inshallah, a more precise figure in the future. Okay. But the point is, this is the bare minimum that he must have. And if he has below the nisab, then he doesn't have to give zakah. If he has the nisab or more than the nisab, then he must give zakah. Now, how do you calculate your zakah? How do you calculate your zakah? First thing you have to do is you have to set a date of the year, because you have to have 1 year from that date, right? So suppose you have to set a date or a month, and every year you have to give it the same time. So suppose you set, for convenience, you set your date as the 1st of Muharram. Okay, the 1st of Muharram. Obviously realize it's the Islamic date. If you go by the Gregorian date, then your year will be longer. Every Christian year is 11 days longer than the Muslim year. Okay, or 10 or 11 or 12, depending on, you know, each year. But every Christian year is longer than the Muslim year. So you have to go by the Muslim year. And many scholars say it's good to give it in Ramadan because you get extra reward. You know what I mean? You guys will give it in Ramadan. So suppose you choose, let's say, not Muharram, but Ramadan. So in the beginning of this year, or the Ramadan of this year, suppose you had $10,000. Okay? Next Ramadan comes and you have $15,000. And it kept on going up. Okay, after you gave your rent and you bought your clothes and you gave your gas and insurance and everything that you have to give, it just kept on going up until you reached $15,000 after one Ramadan. Then you have to give zakah on the minimum amount that you had throughout the year, which was how much? 5? 10? 10 to 15. So the minimum amount that you always had was 10,000. You always had $10,000 in your bank account. Okay? So you have to give the zakah on 10,000, not 15,000. Suppose though, that you started off at 10,000, right? And then something happened. Some operation had to, you know, some operation had to pay for yourself, for your family. And that went you down, made you go down to 5,000. And then by next Ramadan, you went back up to 15,000. Okay? You had an investment that gave you a lot of money and you got 15,000. How much zakat do you have to give now? On 5,000. Basically, what you do, to put it very simply, if you want, you know, to be very simple and yet complicated at the same time, plot out a chart of your money every day. Right? Just theoretically imagine what we're doing. You plot out a chart of your money every day. The lowest point on that chart was the bare minimum amount that you had for 1 year. Okay? So for one whole year, you had at least that amount. You never went below that amount. That is the amount that you have to give your zakah on. Okay? That is the amount that you have to give your zakah on. Not the maximum, but the minimum. And this is the mercy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that the minimum amount that we had for 1 year that was in our ownership, that is what we have to give zakah on. Okay, so suppose we, you know, we just started working, okay? We just graduated out of college, which means our bank account is in three digits, okay? You know, we have like $600 in, you know, in our bank account at U of H or something. And then you start making a lot of money. By the end of the year, you have, let's say, $30,000, okay? What do you have to give zakah on? $600 if it's more than the nisab, which I'm not sure how much it is in dollars. But if it's more than the nisab, you have to give it on that. Otherwise, you don't have to give zakah. Next year, you have to now calculate again for that year. What was the minimum for that year? Okay, so this, every year you have to calculate the minimum that was for that year. Okay, is that clear? Anyone confused? Because it's very important how you calculate your zakah. Okay, Obviously, you give zakah in money, in the sense that, you know, you have to pay money to the poor people. We're going to get to who is deserving of zakah in the next chapter. But that is clear that you calculate the minimum amount for the year, and then you pay concerning the minimum amount. What is the amount of zakah? What is the percentage of zakah? Everyone knows? 2.5%, and this is based on a clear hadith of the Prophet that for every 40 dirhams there is, how much? For 40 dirhams, how much would you give? It's 2.5.
One.
Yeah. The Prophet said for every 40 there's one. Because 1/40 is? 2.5. Right, is that correct? No, 1/40 is not 2.5. It's more than that.
No, 1/40 is 2.5.
It is?
Yes.
Okay, if it is, then it's 1/40. Basically, the Prophet said, out of 40, give whatever is 2.5, which is 1. So if you calculate the percentage, it's 2.5. So whatever the bare minimum is, then you give your 2.5% on that. Okay? Tayyib. How about gold and silver that a woman owns and she wears, basically her jewelry? Well, firstly, how about pearls? Who says you have to give zakah on emeralds and diamonds and rubies and pearls? Who says you have to give zakah on these? I'm sure none of the sisters are going to say yes, they don't want to give any zakah on that. Well, the correct opinion is you don't have to give zakah on these. Why? Because it's not mentioned. We didn't mention it in these four things, right? It doesn't come under gold and silver, okay? Jewelry, in the sense of pearls and diamonds and emeralds and all of these precious stones, right? As long as it's for personal use. Because when you change it into a business, then it gets into what? Another category. Business category, which are the business products. But as long as you purchase something for your own use, right? And you're using it. You're not buying and trading and selling and exchanging this type of jewelry. You have a shop, a jewelry shop. No. If you're using it for your own use, then for sure, no one says you have to give zakah on these precious stones when you own them. Okay? Now, the difference of opinion comes concerning gold and obviously silver. Gold and silver jewelry that women wear. Okay? We're not talking about gold and silver that are sold in the shops, and if you own the shop, you have to give zakah. Of course you do. Everyone says you do. Why? Because it changes from it changes from personal money to business money. And we say business money as zakah. We'll talk about that briefly, the business zakah. But we're talking about personal gold and silver. When the sisters, or even brothers, if they have something silver that they have, do they have to give zakah on that? And the correct opinion is yes, they do. They have to give zakah on gold and silver jewelry that they own. This is because it is a type of money. A type of money that the Prophet ﷺ referred to. And he explicitly told, I think it was Fatima, or one of the Prophet's family, that would you like that Allah, he asked her, do you give zakah on your bangles that you're wearing? Okay, and she said no. So he said, would you like that Allah put two bracelets of fire on you on the Day of Judgment? So she said no. So she gave the whole thing as sadaqah, as charity, out of her fear of, you know, and her love for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But the point is, this hadith and many a hadith are explicit that the Prophet ﷺ told the woman, even though she's wearing gold jewelry, it's not gold coins, she was wearing it. He told her, would you like that Allah, you know, exchange this on the Day of Judgment for two bangles of fire? Okay, so it's clear then that gold and silver jewelry, there is zakat on that. And strangely enough, this is the opinion of the minority, not the majority. The majority say that there is no zakat on gold and silver jewelry. Only the Hanafis, they say that there is zakat on gold and silver. And so the book that I have in front of me, which is a Hanbali book, says there is no gold, there is no zakat. But the correct opinion, and this is the fatwa of Sheikh bin Baz, rahimahullah, and Sheikh Uthaymeen, hafizahullah, and other ulama of our times. And really, this is very explicit, because the hadith explicitly mentioned this, that there is zakat on gold and silver jewelry. So when a sister owns gold above the nisab, and every single sister, I think, owns above the nisab in our times, they have to give zakah on that jewelry. Okay? Tayyib, zakah on money was very simple, and we don't want to go into a lot of detail. But a brief point on a debt. Suppose you have a debt. This is a very common question. Okay? So there's two people involved in a debt. One of them is the one that gives the money, and the other is the one that, obviously, takes the money. Okay? So suppose now we have Muhammad and, let's say, Amr. Okay? Muhammad lent Amr $10,000. Okay? Obviously without interest, because if he lent it with interest, then it's a big, big, big sin. And it's not even allowed for him to say that. It's not even allowed for him to give that condition that he's going to be with interest. Without interest, he lends him $10,000. Okay, who is going to give zakah on this money, Muhammad or Amr? Muhammad did the lending, Amr did the taking. Okay, now in this, again, there's a big ikhtilaf, but I'll just give you, in my humble opinion, as I always say, the correct opinion that I have, and that is that, well, firstly, it is Muhammad that must give the zakah, without any doubt, because it is his money. He is the one that lent it to him, but he is the one that has full ownership of it. Okay, we said one of the conditions of zakah is that he must have ownership of it, right? So, it's whose money is it? It's Muhammad's money. It might be in the possession of Amr, but does Amr own it? No. Muhammad owns it. Okay? So, Amr doesn't have to give zakah on that money. Okay? Muhammad has to give zakah, but now the question is we have to divide this scenario into two possibilities. Two situations. Okay? Two cases. The first case is when Amr is capable of repaying Muhammad that loan, but he hasn't done so. In other words, Muhammad just has to ask. He's just a bit shy, or he doesn't need the money. Amr is capable of repaying his loan. Okay, the money is existent and he can give. In this case, Muhammad must give zakah every year. Because it is as if that money is existent and it's in his account. Even though it might be in Amr's account, but since Amr has it and can pay it back, then he should give zakah every year on that money. Okay? The second scenario is what? Is that Amr doesn't have the money. Suppose he wanted to open a business, you gave him a loan, and that business went bankrupt or whatever. Amr could not pay him back and he doesn't have the money to pay him back. And Allah knows, is he going to pay him back or not? Okay? In this case, Muhammad does not have to give zakah for every year. Okay? And when, eventually, if Amr does give him back the money, then he should give zakah for 1 year only. The previous year, and then obviously, every year that's going to follow. But as soon as he gets back his 10,000 or whatever he gave him, then he should give zakah right then and there for the previous year. And then start a new date with that money for the next year. Okay? This is the correct opinion, inshallah. And it also, it makes a lot of sense too, in that if the money doesn't exist, then why should you give zakah on it, you know? If Amr can't pay you back the money, right? He's not in a position to pay you back. If you lent someone money and that money disappeared or vanished or, you know, it got lost or whatever, in the sense that he cannot pay you back at that particular time, then you do not pay zakah on anything. It's as if that money doesn't exist. Now, suppose Amr becomes successful in his business, he gets that money back, you're just a bit shy to ask him right now, or you don't really need the money, you're like, you know, whenever you can pay me back, you know, whenever you feel comfortable paying me back. But he does have the money. As soon as he gets that money, then you have to start paying zakah. The one that lends the money, he has to start paying zakah on that money. And Allah knows best concerning this opinion, but it seems to be the correct one. And I think this is also the fatwa of one of the kibar ulama. Tayyib. We now move on to the final form of zakah, which is zakah on business items. Business items. Now, anything qualifies as a business item. Anything qualifies as a business item if you buy and sell it. Okay? So, the chair that I'm sitting on can become a business item. Furniture. Okay? Jewelry. Precious stones. Anything. I mean, we don't, you know, anything, you know, topis, clothes, anything. Doesn't matter what you're buying and selling. Books. Whatever you buy and sell and you're planning to do a business or you are doing a business with it, then as long as two conditions are met. Firstly, that you want or you intend to do business with that thing. Suppose you have a bookshop, okay? Before we go there. Suppose you have a huge library, thousands and thousands of books, but that's your personal library, okay? Any zakah on it? No. All of a sudden, you don't want your library anymore and you want to sell it, okay? As soon as you want to make your library into a business venture, okay? Then, from that point in time, you have to count 1 year and start giving zakah on it. Okay? So basically, as soon as you intend to do business with something, from that point in time, you have to give zakah on it every year. Okay? Now, suppose you bought books with the intention of selling them. In this case, automatically, they'll enter into zakah. You don't have to, you know, like suppose the person has a car lot, okay? He doesn't buy cars except to sell them. So it doesn't matter, he has an ongoing running business, okay? So in this case, whatever that date or that time comes, he must give zakah on his stuff, which we'll get to it and how to do that in a little while, okay? Now the nisab of business products is the same as gold and silver. The nisab of business products is the same as gold and silver. Brother in the back, what is the meaning of nisab? Then you have to pay. Not can, you have to pay zakah. If you have less, then you don't pay zakah. Okay. So, the nisab of products, business products, is the same as the nisab of gold and silver, okay? Whatever calculation, which inshallah I'll try to get to soon, inshallah. Now, how does a person calculate his business zakah? You have to realize it's, you know, I mean, it might be very difficult in the sense that he cannot monitor every item that comes in and out of his shop. Suppose he has a car lot, okay? He cannot monitor what car he, you know, what particular car he brought and sold every day, and the value, and when it was sold. It's too difficult to do that. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made it very easy, and the way that you do is that basically you pick one day of the year. Suppose the first of Ramadan. Okay, every time the first of Ramadan comes, you just calculate your stock at hand and give your zakah on that. Okay, so you don't have to basically plot out the whole long chart and everything. No, whatever your business products are worth at that particular day and time that you have your one day of, you know, 1 year, then you give your zakah on that day. Now, obviously, a person should fear Allah, and that, you know, for example, the 28th of Sha'ban, you know, sell out all of his cars. Obviously, this is trickery, and you will be punished because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala knows your intentions. Okay, a person should fear Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and not try to find a trick or a means out. Many people, what they would do, for example, the minimum amount of zakah for sheep is 40. Okay, if you have less than 40, then you don't have to give zakah. What they would do when the zakah collector came to them, they would conveniently lend one goat to their neighbor or something. So when the zakah person came to count, he would count 39 and say, okay, no zakah, move on. Okay, this is trickery. This is deceit, and Allah knows your intentions, and you will be sinful for this. No, if it so happens that you have to sell it, or, you know, do something like this, and, you know, you didn't plan to do so, that's fine. But if you have a business going on, then you just pick one day of the year, let's say the first of Ramadan. Every day, every year, every time that that day comes of the year, right? Every time the first of Ramadan comes back, then you calculate your business stock at hand, you calculate its value, and you give 2.5% of that value if it is above the nisab. Okay, very simple. I mean, not much complication here. Whatever you have, it doesn't matter. Furniture store, bookstore, you know, I mean, clothes store. Doesn't matter, whatever you have. One day of the year, you calculate your product's value. Whatever you have in hand, and you give zakah on that. Now, a very important point before we move on to the next section. And that is that you have to give zakah on the products that you actually buy and sell. Not the products that you need for your business. Okay? What do I mean by this? Can someone understand? Yeah. Exactly. Very good. Suppose you're selling refrigerated items, okay? You're selling Coke cans, for example, okay? Now you have a cooler, you have a container, you have a big refrigerator or freezer. That is in your ownership. You're not selling and buying the freezer. Even though it's on your business premise, right? Your premises, you are not buying and selling that item. So you don't have to give zakah on that. Okay? Likewise, you're a carpenter and you're buying and selling wood products, okay? But obviously you're going to have a lot of tools. You don't buy and sell the tools, you buy and sell the cabinets and the drawers or whatever. So what do you give zakah on? The wooden products, not on the tools. Right? You give zakah on what you are buying and selling, not on the products that you need for your business and trade. Okay? So you have a huge car lot, okay? You don't have to give zakah on the property of the land, because that's yours, you need it for your business. You have to give zakah on the cars. Okay, now let me give you another scenario. One person, he buys houses and he gives them out to rent. Another person, he buys houses and sells those houses. Can someone tell me what will be the zakah of the first person and what will be the zakah of the second person? Yes, what is the zakah of the first person? He who buys houses and gives them out to rent. Will the zakah be on the rent or on the value of the house? Okay, the second person, he buys and sells houses. Will the zakah be on the value of the house? Okay? On the value of the house. So this is the key criterion, the difference here. You have to understand it, that you have to, the first person, he buys a house, but he doesn't want to sell the house. No, that's his now. He just wants to rent it out. So he gives zakah on the money that comes from the rent. Okay? He waits the whole year, basically, like we talked about money. The second person, he actually is buying and selling houses. So this person, he has to pay zakah on the value of the house. Whereas the first person does not have to pay zakah on the value of the house. She has to pay it on the rent that is coming from that house. Same thing goes for example, if you own an Avis rental car company, okay? I suppose you own it. I mean, I don't know the system. I'm not giving a... Let's say you own your own rental car. Let's not say Avis. I don't know the system they have. Suppose you own a rental car company. Do you have to give zakah on the value of the cars? No. Because you're not buying and selling the cars. It's not actively involved in your trade. Suppose you have a car lot. You buy and sell cars. In this case, you give zakah on what? The value of the cars. Okay, we move on. We're spending too much time in business zakah. We wish we had businesses. We don't have businesses. Okay, the next type of zakah we go on to is Zakatul Fitr. By the way, when is this? Okay. The next zakah we go on to is Zakatul Fitr. So basically, if you like, you can say that there are two types of zakah that are obligatory upon us. One of them is the type that we just mentioned, right? And the second type of zakah is a special type of zakah, which is called Zakatul Fitr. Now, Zakatul Fitr is obligatory upon every single Muslim who owns more than his daily requirements. So this is different from the Nisab now. Because there are going to be some people that, well, obviously everyone that pays the first type of zakah will automatically qualify for Zakat al-Fitr, right? But there are going to be a lot of people that are poor. They don't have to give zakah, but they're not that poor that they don't have to give, that they are exempted from Zakat al-Fitr. In other words, if you have more food than what you need for one day, right? The day, basically the night before Eid or the day of Eid, if you have more food than what you need for that day, then Zakat al-Fitr becomes obligatory upon you. Okay? So it is obligatory upon every Muslim who owns more than what he needs for his day, more than what his family needs for that day and night. Okay? Zakat al-Fitr is obligatory when the sun sets on the night before Eid. So when the sun sets the night before Eid, like 15 hours before the Eid prayer, that's when it becomes obligatory. And it must be paid before the Eid prayer. So this is the time slot where Zakat al-Fitr becomes obligatory. Let's suppose the 29th of Sha'ban, the moon was sighted. So Ramadan will be, Eid will be tomorrow. 29th of Ramadan, the moon was sighted. Okay? 29th of Ramadan, the moon was sighted. So tomorrow is going to be Eid. As soon as the sun set of that day, then Zakat al-Fitr becomes obligatory upon you. And you have to pay it until the Eid prayer of the next day. So you have like 15 or 20 hours, okay? Now the ulama say it's allowed to give it a day or two before Eid, but not too long before it. So suppose on the 27th of Ramadan, you can give your zakat for the 28th of Ramadan, 29th of Ramadan, and right before Eid prayer, but you have to give it before Eid prayer. You must give it before Eid prayer, or else it is not zakat al-fitr, it'll just be any other sadaqah that you're giving. Okay? So it is obligatory to give zakat al-fitr before Eid prayers. And it is one sa', write down the Arabic term. What is the amount of this zakah? One sa', sa', an ayn at the end. One sa' of a staple food item, such as wheat, or rice, or anything like, you know, dates, or any type of grain that is used in the community. Okay? Any type of grain, or any type of wheat, or staple item that is used as food, you have to give one sa' of that. One sa' equals 4 mud. Very good. How much is a mud? Well, one sa'. So, no, a mud is a fourth of a sa', and a sa' is 4 muds. Okay? Is that clear? You know how much to give now? This is called a circular logic or circular argument. Okay, one sa' is 4 muds, and a mud basically is a fistful. Not a fistful, but you put your hands together and you pick something up. Like a full 2 hands of grain. This is like a mud. Okay, so in our times in like Saudi Arabia, they sell like a few kilograms, maybe like you know, a few kilograms of rice, like 5 kilograms of rice would be like basically, you know, a bag of rice or something, you know. So calculate it and be generous. Obviously, it's Ramadan; you want your sins to be forgiven. And what is the point of Zakat al-Fitr? Do you know? It is to purify your fast. Okay, it is to purify your fast. If you backbited or did something, this zakat, inshallah, will purify that fast from what you did. So Zakat al-Fitr is paid the day of Eid, or the night before Eid, or one or two nights before Eid. And its amount is one sa' of a staple food item. Okay? And according to the majority of scholars, it is not allowed to give it in money. It is not allowed to give it in money. Okay? You should try your best to find someone who is willing to accept Zakat al-Fitr as a staple food item. And there are people, especially like in our times, we have immigrants from Kosovo and Bosnia that are in Houston, right? And I remember when I was in U of H, when we were living in Houston, we arranged always to give it in staple food items to these people. We gave them rice and we gave them flour, we gave them wheat, and they would benefit from this, okay? Now suppose theoretically, hypothetically, you could not find someone to accept this, then perhaps in this case, give money, okay? But I say that, first of all, give it a good shot, and you will find someone, inshallah. You will find someone that is willing to accept this. And what you should do, actually, what the brothers and sisters should do, is get together and arrange one person to go and find a number of families that are in need of this, okay, and then give it to them, give this food to them, so that, you know, not everyone is busy finding, because, like, for example, you know, Madrasa Islamia, they have a lot of families in need there, okay, and other places, I'm sure you'll find groups of immigrants living together there. Yes, what? One sa' equals 4 med. 1 med equals 1/4 sa'. Simple. 1 sa' equals 4 meds. No, 1. And 1 med equals, like, you put your hands together and you pick it up out of wheat or something. That's like 1 med. Okay? And 1 sa' equals 4 of those. So you have to do that 4 times. Where is the number 2 coming from? 1 sa' equals 4 med. Okay? 1 med is that you take your hands and you pick up something, like a full handful. Okay? So 4 of those is 1 sa'. Okay? Clear? Okay. It is not allowed to give zakat al-fitr after the Eid. You must give it before Eid. Is that clear? Okay? It is obligatory for you to give it before Eid. Okay? Let's keep questions to the end, inshallah. Okay? It is obligatory to give zakat al-fitr before Eid. Zakat al-fitr is, like I said, obligatory for every single Muslim. So if a child is born the night of Eid, then you must pay zakat on his behalf. Every Muslim, the person who is responsible. So the man must pay zakat al-fitr for himself and for his wife or wives or his children. All of them, he is responsible to pay zakat al-fitr for. Okay? And he must pay zakat for anyone that is dependent on his mother or father, for example, if they are not dependent on themselves, they are dependent on their child. Whoever he is the provider for, he must pay zakat for all of them. Every single Muslim. Okay, separate zakat al-fitr. Even if a child is born, and some ulama say that even if a woman is pregnant, it's encouraged for them to give zakat on behalf of the baby inside her womb. Okay, it's encouraged to give zakat, even though it's not obligatory to do so. Okay? Tayyib, let us move on now to the payment of zakah. The payment of zakah. Obviously, it is not allowed to delay paying the zakah for more than a year. You have to pay it at least once a year. Okay? Suppose though, I mean, can you pay it before its time? Can you pay it, suppose your date is the first of Ramadan, okay? You meet someone that is needy in Dhul Hijjah. You say, well, I'm sorry, I can't pay you any zakah. I have to pay it on the first Ramadan. Can you pay it then and there to him? Yes, you can. You can pay your zakah before its time. So let me give you an example. Suppose a person had to pay $10,000 worth of zakah. Okay, an example. $10,000 of zakah we're talking about, not his money. He had to pay $10,000 of zakah. Okay? What he can do is that throughout the year, whenever he finds people that are needy of zakah, he pays them. Suppose he pays so-and-so 500, then 1,000 here, 1,000 here. When his time comes, suppose the first Ramadan of the next year comes, he then calculates how much zakah he paid throughout the year. It totals $7,000. Okay? Then he will deduct this 7,000 from the 10,000 that he has to pay, and he only has to pay 3,000 at that time. Okay? You understand? Very simple. Basically, you're allowed to give your zakah before its time. You're not allowed to give it after its time. You have to give, but you are allowed to give it before its time. And this is very convenient, okay? Throughout the year, a person can continually give zakah. And then when his day comes that he has to give zakah, he calculates, he has written down how much zakah he gave throughout the year. So he subtracts that from the total that he has to give for zakah, and he gives the remainder of zakah. Yes, you can also give zakah for a year or two in advance. But not more than that. The scholars say a year or even 2 years, but don't give it for 10 years in advance. That's the point, you know. It's like, okay, I'll give, you know. No, you're supposed to give it at its proper time. But if you wish to give it a year earlier, okay, suppose there was a person that, you know, was in great need, and, you know, he's a relative of yours or something, a cousin or something, right? And he was in great need of, let's say, $10,000, okay? And yet your zakah is only $5,000, okay? You gave him the 10,000, so you don't have to give zakah, and that your intention was zakah, so you don't have to give it for 2 years then. Okay? But the scholars say don't do it for more than 2 years. A year or two like that is fine. You give it before its time, that's fine. It's allowed, but it is not encouraged to do so. Okay? Likewise, it is strongly encouraged to give zakah in your community where you are living. Okay? It is strongly encouraged to give zakah in the community that you are living in. So you should not transfer it to another community unless there is a reason to do so. However, if you do transfer it to another community, this also counts as your zakah. So suppose, like most of us, we're originally from outside of America, our parents and our relatives, okay? So we have to give $5,000 of zakah. The scholars say that it is encouraged to give it in Houston, or wherever you're living, unless there is a good reason for you to transfer it elsewhere. And a good reason, for example, might be that one of your relatives is in need of zakah. So we have, for example, a cousin or a distant relative that it is not obligatory for us to support them, but they are still our blood and kin. So then in this case, the scholars say the best thing to do is to give some of your money where you live and some of it abroad. Okay, it's not good or it's not encouraged to transfer all of your money abroad. You should give zakah the place where you live. This is because the Prophet told Mu'adh ibn Jabal in the famous hadith of, what famous hadith did we cover? What is the right of Allah upon you? What is the right of Allah mankind upon Allah? When he told him about zakah, what did he tell Mu'adh ibn Jabal? If they obey you in salah, then order them with zakah. And take the zakah from their rich and give it to their poor. Okay, Mu'adh was going to, where was he going to? Who remembers? Yemen, okay. So he said, take it from their rich and give it to their poor. Meaning, zakah should be within the community. Okay, zakah should be within the community. So the scholars say it is encouraged to give zakah within your community unless there is a need or a reason for you to take it abroad. In this case, it is allowed to take it abroad. And even in this case, it is best to give some of it in your community and some of it abroad. Okay. Simple enough factor. Tayyib, we get on now to the next section. Inshallah, we can finish zakah today. We might even finish fiqh before the scheduled time. We can finish zakah today, inshallah. The next section is, who do you give zakah to? We've talked about, what have we talked about in order? Well, first thing was the nisab of zakah, the money, and then the zakah of business, and then Zakat al-Fitr, and then the payment of zakah, and now we say, who do you pay zakah to? Okay. Now the primary verse with regards to this, can someone give me some water? The primary verse with regards to this is Surah At-Tawbah, verse 60. Okay, Surah At-Tawbah, verse 60, in which Allah Subhanahu wa Taala said, this is an important verse because this is the primary and the only, you know, clear verse about who are the recipients of zakah. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, إِنَّمَا الصَّدَقَاتُ لِلْفُقَرَاءِ وَالْمَسَاكِينِ وَالْعَامِلِينَ عَلَيْهَا. That sadaqat, or in this verse, refers to zakah. Zakah is only for, and then he mentions eight categories. Zakah is only for these eight categories. You cannot give zakah to anyone who does not fall into one of these eight categories. Okay? So the first category that Allah mentions, what is the verse number, first of all? Write this down. Tawbah verse 60. Everyone should go back and know that this is the primary verse when it comes to the recipients of zakah. The first category is, I want you to write down the some of the Arabic terms are important. Faqir, fuqara, faqir. Okay. The second category is miskin. What is the difference between faqir and miskin? Faqir and miskin both mean poor people, but fuqara are those people who have less than half of their minimum needs. Okay. This is how the scholars have defined it. Faqir, a person who is faqir, he has less than half of what he really needs. Okay? He can't pay his rent, he can't feed his family. He has less than half of what he really needs. So like the beggars on the street that we see, many of them are faqirs. Well, actually many of them are millionaires even, I hear. You know what I'm saying? They just get a lot of money. But many of them are faqirs in the sense they don't have a house, they don't have... These are fuqara. A miskin is he who has more than half, but he still doesn't have what he needs. So he might be able to pay his rent, right? But he can't really provide adequate food for his family, for example. So they're poor people, but they're just barely managing to live. But they need some money still. Whereas a faqir is an extremely poor person, okay? So a faqir, if you like, is an extremely poor person, and the miskin is just a poor person. what is the difference between the two? The scholars say that if you have half of your needs, suppose the person needs a bare minimum, I think the poverty level in America is 10,000, I think, a year. I think that's what the government defines as below the poverty line. So suppose a person has only 5,000 or less. In this case, he'll be qualified as a faqir from a Sharia perspective, not an American government perspective. Okay? If he has more than 5,000 but less than 10, he'll be qualified as miskin. Okay? Basically, we're not concerned with numbers or figures. We're concerned with how the person is living. If he can manage to, you know, earn a lot of what he needs but not all of it, then he is a miskin. If he cannot even manage to do that, then he is a faqir. So you can give zakah to these two people. The third category that Allah mentions are the workers for zakah, al-amilina alayha. Now, in the good old times when we had an Islamic state, what would the Khalifa do? He would send out government workers, basically, to collect the zakah. So basically, when you have those government workers that collect the zakah and bring it back, then the Khalifa must pay them their salaries too. So their salaries also come out of zakah. Okay? In our times, this is not applicable, so we can gloss over it. Okay? But know that this is the third category. The fourth category are, write it down, مُؤَلَّفَةِ قُلُوبُهُمْ مُؤَلَّفَةِ قُلُوبُهُمْ مُؤَلَّفَةِ قُلُوبُهُمْ مُؤَلَّفَةِ قُلُوبُهُمْ literally translates as those whose hearts you wish to soften. Okay? Now what is this category meant for? This category is meant again for the Islamic State, not for individuals. Okay? What would occur and what the Prophet ﷺ did sometimes is that he used to give a lot of money to leaders and to chieftains of their tribes. What did this do? It did two things. Firstly, it made them sympathetic towards the Muslims. They wouldn't harm the Muslims. Secondly, it made them accept Islam. Many of these people, they accepted Islam. Once the Prophet ﷺ, he gave a whole valley full, valley. You know how big a valley is? He gave a whole valley full of flock of sheep to a certain chieftain. A huge, famous chieftain of his tribe. Okay? And that must be literally thousands and thousands of sheep, which might in our times even work out to be multi-million dollars. Okay? Huh? Sheep. Singular and plural, right? Yeah. So he gave him literally thousands and thousands. When this man went back to his nation, right? He said, O people, accept Islam, for verily this person is a prophet because he does not fear poverty. So the Prophet ﷺ, by giving him that much money, the man was so, if you like, overwhelmed by the Prophet's generosity that he realized this must be a prophet. This must be a prophet. So he said, O my people, accept Islam, for verily this prophet is a person who is a prophet because he never fears poverty. He never fears he's going to... No, what man would give that much money? Multi-million dollars he just gave him to a chieftain like that. Okay? What happened? Not only did this tribe become safe from harming the Muslims, not only did they prevent themselves from harming the Muslims, they all accepted Islam. Okay? So one of the people, or one of the categories that you give zakah to, are those people whom either you want to protect Islam from being harmed by, or with, or you want them to come closer to Islam. Okay? Now in our times we cannot apply this category. We should not stand up and give it to our Christian friends and relatives. No. This is meant for the Islamic State. Okay? Suppose they have a country that is at enemies with the Muslim state, then they can give of their zakat money, they can give that country some money, so that you know, that country will become more sympathetic towards Islam and might even accept Islam. So what category was this? The fourth category. The fifth category is the freeing of slaves. Okay? And this shows you the humane concept of slavery in Islam, that one of the ways that you can use zakah is to free slaves. When you know a person who owns a slave, and that slave wishes to be freed, then you're allowed to use your zakah money to free that slave. Buy his freedom from his master. Okay? You can purchase that slave and set him free for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But obviously in our times there is no slavery, so we can again, we don't have to concentrate on this point and the ikhtilaf and all of that in there. Okay? The sixth category is the gharim. Write down the Arabic term, gharim. Al-gharim. The gharim, gharim. You know the verse, yeah? How can you ask me? Recite the verse. Abdul Rahman, recite the verse from the beginning. Wal masakini. Wa fi al-riqabi. Wal gharimin. It's a meme, gharim. What is a gharim? What is a gharim? A gharim is a number of things fall into it. Basically, firstly, primarily, there are those people who are in debt. They are in debt. They don't have the money to pay off their debt. Okay? As long as the debt was halal, it wasn't haram. I mean, in the sense that they're not taking a debt to open up a haram business. I mean, they took a debt for a halal reason, and for some reason they cannot pay their debt off, then you can give money to those people in debt. Another meaning of gharim, another connotation of gharim, is a person who agrees to cause reconciliation between two tribes who are at war by paying a certain money or fee. How does that occur? Suppose now This was a common in the previous times that two tribes will be fighting and they kill a person. One person dies. Obviously, there's something in Islam known as blood money, okay? Which we don't have time to study. That's one of the chapters of fiqh. But basically, you have to give blood money. You have as an expiation for that killing that you did. But this blood money is a huge amount. In our times, it works out to like $40,000-$50,000, okay? Even if not more. So obviously, not everyone has this money. So then the tribes are going to be at war because of this blood money. That until you pay us this blood money, we're going to fight you. So one man will stand up and say, no, don't fight, I will pay this blood money on your behalf. So this person who stood up to cause reconciliation between these two people, or these two tribes, or these two communities, then we say that he too is capable of being given zakatu. But if you like a more practical implication, is one who is in debt, also ghadim. The seventh category is, fi sabilillah, in the way of Allah. In the way of Allah. And these are those who do jihad. These are the mujahidun. That you pay money to them so that they can buy horses, they can buy armor, they can fight for the way of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You're allowed to give zakat to the mujahidun. The people that are doing jihad, you're allowed to give zakat for them. Okay. And the eighth category, the final category, is the wayfarer. The wayfarer. Who is the wayfarer? When I first heard this word in English, I had no idea what it meant. You had to look up in the dictionary. It means the person who is traveling away from his home and he doesn't have any money now. He might be a millionaire in his territory, but right now he doesn't have any money. Now remember, in the good old days, you had to travel with your money. Okay? There weren't bank accounts and your ATM cards and wherever you are, you can take money out, credit cards. No. You had to travel with your money. So suppose your money finishes or someone steals all of your money. What are you going to do then? So these type of people, they are allowed to be given zakah. You can give zakah to people who are wayfarers. In other words, they have cut off their source of income at that present time. These are eight categories. Are they clear? Okay. Whatever category you give to, you should only give to as much as they need. And don't go beyond that. So suppose a wayfarer, let me give you a practical example. You meet a guy, he tells you, suppose, you know, he came from, well, this is common more in Saudi Arabia than anywhere. They came for Umrah, they came for Hajj. I mean, you really don't meet wayfarers that much over here. But in Saudi Arabia, you always meet these type of people. They came for Hajj, right? And someone stole their money, or they lost their money. So, these people, you give them zakah to get home. You give them zakah for plane tickets home, right? But you don't give them more than that, okay? So, for example, if the plane ticket costs 2,000 riyals, or let's say, $1,000, okay, or $700, right? You don't give them $2,000 to go first class, zakah money, for example. Nor do you give them more than what they need. You give them the bare minimum what they need, enough for their food and water until they depart, and then travel expenses, okay? Likewise, the poor person, if he is poor and he needs, let's say, $5,000, okay, to give his rent, okay, you don't give him $20,000 or $30,000. You only give him the bare minimum. This is common sense. You give him what he needs. You don't give him more than that. You give him what he needs. All of these eight categories. The last section that we're going to discuss, these are eight categories that we give to, okay? Before we move on, five of them, you only give when they are literally poor. And these are obviously the faqir, the miskeen, the slave, the one who is in debt, and the wayfarer. They don't have money. Obviously, faqir and miskeen by definition doesn't have money. But for example, the slave. It is possible that the slave might have money. It is possible that the slave, for example, his master will say, you can work 2 hours of the day. Okay? And whatever you earn in 2 hours is yours. So over a period of time, he has enough money to free himself. In that case, you are not allowed to give him zakah. Why? Because he has the money. Likewise, the one who has a debt. Well, many people have debt, but they can pay it off. Can you give zakah to such a person? No, only when he really doesn't have the money, and likewise the wayfarer, the traveler, only when he does not have the money can you really give him zakah. The others, you cannot give them to, if they are, excuse me, what did I say? Five of them you can only give to when they are poor. The other three, even if they have money, even if they are rich, you can give them money. Who are these three? The mujahid, the mu'allafati qulubuhum, and the workers, exactly. Amiluna, very good. These three, even if they are rich, you can give them zakah money. Okay? The mujahid, even if he has enough money to purchase it for himself, but because of the fact that he's doing jihad, we're allowed to give him money, extra money, to buy more stuff, or to buy a better horse, or whatever. We're allowed to give him money. Okay? Also, the one that is collecting the zakah, he's also allowed to take zakah. What was the third person? مُؤَلَّفَةِ قُلُوبُهُمْ. Okay? The مُؤَلَّفَةِ قُلُوبُهُمْ is that even if that person might be rich, if you think that giving him more money was going to cause him to come close to Islam, then they are allowed to take money. Actually, you know, the scholars also say that the gharim, he's also allowed to take money if he's rich. So actually that brings it up to four people. The gharim, he's also allowed to take zakah if he's rich. Who is the gharim? Yeah, but in one sense, okay, let's make a tafsir. Right, exactly. The reconciliation one can. How about the one that's in debt, normal debt? No. The one that's taking on a debt that's not his to cause reconciliation, this is the one that you can give zakah to. The one that has a personal debt, if he is rich, then you don't give him zakah. Whereas the one that's taken on the reconciliation debt, even if he is rich, then you can give him zakah. Because that's not his debt in the first place. He took it on to cause reconciliation between these two tribes. Is that clear? So basically, of these eight categories, right? Of these eight categories, five of them can only be given zakah when they physically don't have the money, and four of them can be given zakah even if they are rich. Well, 5 plus 4 is 9, so how do we get 8? The gharim, we divide into two categories, right? We said the gharim is of two types. One of them is he who causes reconciliation between people, and the second is the one that is in debt. So the one that causes reconciliation, you can give him money even if he's rich, and the one that is in his own personal debt, you can only give him money if he is not rich. But we move on to the last section, and alhamdulillah, we would then have finished with the chapter of zakah at our level. Obviously, this is a very brief discussion. Apart from this, one of the best discussions of zakah is the PhD dissertation by the famous scholar of our times, Yusuf al-Qardawi, who unfortunately changed his manhaj after he wrote the PhD, but his PhD is excellent. It's all about, it's called Fiqh al-Zakah. It's a two-volume, this thick PhD dissertation that he did at Azhar, and it is considered to be one of the best books written on this topic. Really a good book. We covered in 1 hour what he spent the whole PhD doing. You know, so I'm just trying to show you, don't think that khalas, we finished all we need to know. No, I'm just going over quickly what we need to know, so we know how to deal with zakah. And like I said, I encourage all of you to go back and do your own research. The last section that we're going to do quickly is who you cannot give zakah to. Who can hazard a guess firstly who you cannot give zakah to? Non-Muslims, very good. Number one, non-Muslims, except one category. No. مُؤَلَّفَةِ قُلُوبُهُمْ. Okay, those ones, yeah. The مُؤَلَّفَةِ قُلُوبُهُمْ, you can give them zakah. Guys. Okay. So the first thing is non-Muslims. Non-Muslims, you are not allowed to give zakah to non-Muslims. Unless the one category, مُؤَلَّفَةِ قُلُوبُهُمْ, and we said that in our times, we should not take this responsibility. This is the responsibility of the Islamic State. So for our purposes, we cannot give zakah to a non-Muslim. The second person we cannot give zakah to is a rich person. Except for the four categories we mentioned. Okay? The second is a rich person. The third is a man who is strong and capable of earning money. Okay? So, we don't give zakah to those people that are capable of earning money, but out of laziness they don't. Okay? We do not give zakah to people who are capable of earning money, but out of laziness they do not. Because the Prophet said in one hadith that zakah is not allowed for the ghani or the rich, nor is it allowed for the strong man who is capable of earning. And by strong we don't mean, you know, super strong. We mean strong meaning, you know, normal, average strength. He is healthy. He's a healthy man. We don't mean, yani, mashallah, I mean bodybuilder. We mean just normal man who is capable of doing anything. He can work a labor job and get $5 an hour. We don't give zakah to him. Okay, he is capable of earning his own money. We don't give him zakah. So, the third person is what? The strong man. The capable, okay. The lazy strong man, okay. The fourth person that you don't give zakah to are the family of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Okay, Ali Muhammad. The family of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. To be more precise, Banu Hashim. Just write Banu Hashim. Anyone that's descendant of this tribe of Banu Hashim, right? You are not allowed to give zakah to them. Why is this? The Prophet ﷺ said that No, no, you're getting confused. The Prophet said that zakah is the dirtiness of people, the discarded dirtiness of people. Why? Because it purifies your money. So it is the osakh, or the junk of people. Not the junk, but like the filth of people. So it is not permissible for the Ali Muhammad to take of this filth. Okay? So the Prophet's family, they have a special status, that they are above taking zakah. So we are not allowed to give zakah to a person who is of the Prophet's family. And in our times, we have millions of people who claim to be the Prophet's family, but you know, in reality they're not. I mean, you know, they have to prove that they are of the Prophet's family, okay? Every Tom, Dick, and Harry in our times, really. I mean, not Tom, Dick, and Harry, but you know, whatever. Tahir, Muhammad, and Hassan, whatever you want to say, you know? And, I mean, I say, a joke that I crack, it seems as if all of the Prophet's family, they moved to Pakistan, if you ask me, you know? I mean, every second guy seems to say, he's of the Prophet's family. No, I mean, not everyone who claims he's of the Prophet's family is of the Prophet's family. I mean, the Prophet's family means they have a lineage, they have a, you know, they know their ancestors, they can trace the roots back to the Banu Hashim, okay? You're not allowed to give money to these type of people. Likewise, you're not allowed to give money, which category is this? No, the fifth now. This is now the fifth we're going to talk about. Yeah, so the fifth one now is that you cannot give money to those people who are dependent on you. So this includes your sons, your fathers, your mothers, your daughters, anyone that is dependent on you, your wives, okay? You are not allowed to give zakah to them because they are dependent on you, okay? It is your responsibility to take care of them. So you don't go to zakah to take care of them. How about your cousins? You're not responsible to take care of them. So it is doubly rewarded if you give zakah to your relatives. If you give zakah to your relatives, then you have a double reward. First, for giving zakah. Secondly, for helping your family. Okay? So that's a double reward. You should give zakah to your family, as long as they're Muslim, obviously. You know? As long as they're Muslim. So, these are the five categories of people that you cannot give zakah to. Can the wife give zakah to her husband? Why? MashaAllah, this guy's a genius, huh? MashaAllah. Give him the cake. Definitely, MashaAllah, very good. The wife can give zakah to the husband. Why? Because it's not her responsibility to take care of the husband. As long as the husband fulfills the criteria of being accepted. I mean, you know, her husband's not a lazy buffer, you know what I'm saying? I mean, her husband is one of these eight people mentioned, right? Then it is doubly rewarding for the wife to give zakah to the husband. Okay, she is doubly rewarded that she gives zakah to the husband, because she is not obligated to take care of the husband. So the correct opinion, even though some scholars say she shouldn't, but the correct opinion is no, she should, and she will get a double reward. Because her husband is, she is not required to take care of her husband or to pay for him. So if she does do so, and he is qualified to accept zakah, then she will get a double reward. Tayyib, with that we conclude Kitabu Zakah, and we'll have 5-10 minutes of question. After that, the sisters, if they are interested in question and answers, please, sisters, can you indicate if you want to question and answer today or not?
Knock on the door.
Okay. Okay, so inshallah, after 15 minutes, there'll be question and answer with the sisters after these 10 minutes. Now,
many precious stones are set in gold, such as emerald rings. Does one pay zakah on these?
Yes. When you, okay, so, brothers, sisters. Sabr, patience. The question is very good concerning zakah and that jewelry that has gold and precious stones. In this case, you go to a goldsmith, you go to a person who's an expert in jewelry, and you ask him to calculate for you the weight of the gold versus the weight of the stone. And then you pay zakah for the gold and you don't pay it for the stone. Okay, so you have to differentiate between the gold and the other items, and give zakah on the gold and not on the other items. No.
Is it allowed to give sadaqah to the non-Muslims?
Sadaqah, no. Sadaqah is different from zakah. Sadaqah you can give to non-Muslims. Okay, what is sadaqah, by the way? We didn't talk about sadaqah. Sadaqah is voluntary charity. Anything above zakah is sadaqah. You can give sadaqah to anyone you want. You can give sadaqah to the Prophet's family even. Sadaqah is different from zakah. Okay.
No, there can't be. There can't be, because we have a class after lunch.
So it's just Q&A can't be after lunch because there's a class immediately after.
We're giving the class of Musalah. I'm giving the class of Musalah. We don't have time. The Hadith, yeah. Musalah is Hadith, yeah. Let's see what it holds. Anyway, we'll see about that. What was the question? Oh, we answered that, right? Sadaqah, you're allowed to give to anyone. Sadaqah, you can give to kafirs, to Muslims, to the Prophet's family. It doesn't matter. Sadaqah, you can give to anyone. And the more you give, the more rewarded you are. I mean, there's no, I mean, everyone knows sadaqah is a rewarding act. You know, we didn't talk about, ignore that one. We don't really.
Is zakah due on investments in stocks?
Is zakah due on investments in stocks? Yes, definitely it is due on investments in stocks. Okay, because it falls under businesses. Okay, and there are different opinions on how to give investments or how to give zakah on investments and stocks. However, it seems that you just follow the general way of what we talked about in business investments, i.e. you take one day of the year, and whenever that day comes, then you give 2.5% on whatever you have. If you have $100,000 in stocks, then every year of that day, whatever day you chose, then you give 2.5% of whatever you have. Next year, if you have $200,000 on that day, then you give on that. So one day of the year, you do it. Now,
is dawah an acceptable cause for giving zakah? Like TV programs in Islam?
I know that Qardawi says that yes it is, but no, I don't agree with that at all. I don't agree with that. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, in the way of Allah, fi sabilillah. And by almost unanimous consensus, I mean, the vast majority of the Salaf and the scholars of tafsir, they said that fi sabilillah means jihad, specifically. Okay? Fi sabilillah specifically means jihad. Okay, so it is not allowed. So, for example, can you use your zakat to build masjids? Why not? Does it fall under one of these eight categories? No, that's why not. No, you can't use zakat to build masjids. You can't use zakat to build orphanages. You can't use zakat to build hospitals. You can't use zakat to build madrasas and tahfiz schools. Why? Because it doesn't fall in one of these eight categories. You can use sadaqah, but you cannot use zakah. You can use sadaqah, but you cannot use zakah. And in my humble opinion, you cannot. Definitely TV programs, no. You know why? Because even those scholars, like some of the ulama, they allowed it for da'wah purposes. What do they mean by da'wah purposes? Some of the scholars, they said that, for example, you print books, pamphlets on Islam and give them out. TV programs, each TV program costs you $50,000 or $100,000. You pay ridiculous, exorbitant amounts for something which is very modernistic and very little benefit. So no, I would definitely say no. You know?
Can you pay your zakah to help someone get off of interest?
You cannot obviously pay zakah, well, to interest, but if you're saying he has a debt, that's an interest debt, right? And he took the loan for a halal reason, then yes, inshallah, if you pay him money to pay off his debt as fast as possible, inshallah, it is allowed. No.
What about a woman going on Hajj? Is this jihad for her? Is zakah allowed to give in this situation?
No, you cannot give zakah for people going for Hajj. This is not one of the categories of zakah. People going for Hajj. We don't have time to talk about Hajj and Umrah, but Hajj is not obligatory on you if you cannot afford to go. Hajj is not obligatory on you if you don't have the money to go. Therefore, there is no zakah that you give for Hajj. As for the Hajj being jihad, yes, it is jihad for her. This is the best jihad that the woman can do, is to go for Hajj. Because the Prophet said that the best jihad for women is Hajj. But you're not allowed to make qiyas from there to there. You know, you can't say since this is her Hajj, she's allowed to take zakah. No. Zakah is not obligatory on her unless she can afford the journey for Hajj. Otherwise, she doesn't have to go for Hajj.
Can zakat al-fitr be given to non-Muslims?
No, zakat can only be, no, it should only be given to Muslims.
If your business is service-oriented, is there zakah that needs to be paid?
Example, tutoring.
Like
for
a tutoring service?
Yes, the zakah has to be paid on the money that you gain, and the money is subject to the zakah where you talked about, 2.5% after 1 year. Okay? So if your zakah, if your business is basically, like the sister, service-oriented, that there's nothing physical involved, or you rent out your apartments or your houses, for example, okay? You rent out your houses, in this case, you give zakah on the money that you earn. After 1 year, you just give a zakah on that. This question about slavery, really, since it's not that practical right now, I wouldn't really want to get into a lot of detail here. It's best really to ignore this now.
I did not understand the question about zakah. Is it that I cannot give zakah to non-Muslim relatives, or is it they cannot give zakah to me?
Non-Muslims don't give zakah. It means that you cannot give zakah to non-Muslims. You cannot give zakah to non-Muslims. Okay? If you want, you can give sadaqah to them. You can give charity. And it's very good, it's very encouraging for you to give charity if they... obviously, for example, your parents, if they're non-Muslims, or your children, if they're non-Muslim, you have to support them anyway. This is your obligation. Okay? If they're your non-Muslim relatives, the point is you cannot give them zakah, but you're allowed to give them sadaqah. Okay, other charities. You just can't give them zakah.
If a married woman works, is she required to pay zakah even though her husband pays for them?
She has to pay zakah on her money. If a woman has a source of income, she has to pay zakah on her money, and her husband has to pay zakah on his money. Okay? Her husband is not obligated to pay zakah on her money. The person that owns the money is the one that is going to give zakah on that money. Zakatul fitr, if the woman cannot afford to pay zakah, the husband pays on her behalf. But the other type of zakah, no. The type of zakah that, no, the type that you give to these eight categories, and the zakah that's 2.5%, the person that owns the money, if the woman owns the money, she gives zakah, not her husband. If the woman owns the jewelry, she gives zakah, not her husband. The woman that owns the jewelry, she is the one that must give zakah on that jewelry, not her husband. Now, if her husband gives on her behalf, that is fine and acceptable, but it is not his obligation to pay for her zakah. Neither is it her obligation to pay for his zakah. Because the woman owns her money, and the man owns his money. And each one of the two, it is obligatory for them to give zakah on their money.
I know we don't have to worry about this as non-scholars, but out of curiosity, even though we don't deal with interest, inflation does affect the value of money. So do the scholars have to take that into account to convert from dirhams, and dinars, dollars, etc.?
I have no idea. Just have to go back to the scholars and find out. And as a side point, you know that the reason inflation occurs is because of interest. If interest didn't occur, there would be no inflation. So the Americans are in a continuous vicious cycle, is that they can't live without interest, and because of interest, their money value goes more, and so it's a vicious cycle. That's why in the Islamic system, there is no interest, so there never will be inflation. But I don't know the answer to this question. The second question I already answered, if a woman owns gold or silver. Okay, so she's saying, how does she pay zakah if she doesn't get any money? Okay, concerning all she owns is jewelry. Should she sell some of the jewelry or her property because she is not earning and then pay the zakah? Without any doubt, the woman is obligated to pay her own zakah. It is not the husband's obligation to pay her zakah. If she owns more than the nisab, and that is only in jewelry, and she does not have any money to pay the jewelry, and her husband refuses to pay for her, all of these things taken into account, then she must sell some of the jewelry to pay her zakah. Okay? It is her obligation. Now obviously, it's not going to be a very healthy marriage if the husband is so strict, but I'm saying though, Islamically speaking, it is her obligation. Okay? It is her obligation to pay for her zakah. It is not her husband's obligation to pay for her zakah. So if she owns a lot of jewelry, and she doesn't have any money except that jewelry, then she must sell that jewelry to pay that zakah. Unless her husband's willing to pay for it, in that case it's fine. Otherwise she must pay her own jewelry.